Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Depending upon which opinion poll you read, and there have been several, the race for Chicago mayor is looking like a dead heat among a small handful of candidates, and a runoff is all but guaranteed. This week, we're going to hear from one of the apparent frontrunners, Congressman Jesus Chuy García. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Jesus García has had a number of prominent stops on his way to this bid to be Chicago's mayor. He was elected to the Chicago City Council in 1986, part of a group of reformers that gave then Mayor Harold Washington the majority he needed on the council. In 1992, he became the first Mexican-American elected to the Illinois State Senate. And I was WBBM's legislative correspondent back then and remember interviewing him on his first day on the Senate floor. He later ran for Cook County Commissioner. That was in 2009, and he won. And he went to Congress a decade later. He later ran for mayor, famously forcing Rahm Emanuel into a runoff for his second term. And now he is running for mayor again in a crowded race to unseat incumbent Lori Lightfoot. Well, we're going to talk about the issues in this race and Congressman García's plans during this half hour, and we're doing it via Zoom conferencing. Congressman Jesus García, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. Great to join you, Craig. Always a pleasure.
Well, likewise. Well, let's talk about where this race is just over 2 weeks out from Election Day. There have been several polls reported in the past couple of months, some of them by campaigns, some independent with varying track records. But let's talk about the one this week from the Chicago Sun-Times, WBEZ Public Radio, and NBC5 Telemundo, all respected outlets. And it shows a three-way statistical tie among you, Paul Vallis and Lori Lightfoot, with you holding a slight lead. What does that tell you about how this race is evolving?
Voters are paying attention. I think the variety of polls that have been published are showing a movement. That means voters are thinking about it, thinking about the issues, and thinking about the positions of candidates. This race will be decided in the next 2 weeks, and it's going to come down to quite a finish, I think.
Indeed, but by some of the measures, Paul Vallis has seemed to be gaining from back in the field. How much of a concern is that to you? And does that say anything about how this race is going?
Well, you know, a good poll came out this week that has us in first. And if you look at what our team is doing, we're rolling out some great endorsements. Today, for example, we rolled out the endorsement of Congressman Mike Quigley yesterday. Former Governor Pat Quinn, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, and Representative Robin Gable. But I feel pretty confident that we will be in a runoff. Obviously, Vallis seems to be doing well, but he has not received a whole lot of scrutiny. I think now that he registers as a front runner in the polls means that there will be added scrutiny, and we've begun to see that. For example, in yesterday's breaking story about him getting a homeowner exemption in a Palos home where he apparently lives or has claimed that homeowner exemption. So it's going to get interesting. There's a focus on, you know, his positions in education, and his performance, whether it was Chicago, Philadelphia, New Orleans, or other places as well. So there's added scrutiny. Being a front runner subjects you to a line of fire. I've been the target of that for the past month plus, with a lot of paid TV seeking to portray me in a negative light. But people know me. They know my history and my consistency. But again, the next 2 weeks will be critical. And that's why we're going to be campaigning full throttle all over Chicagoland.
And for the record, I should point out that the Vallas campaign has denied the stories about his residency. And let's also talk about your campaign this week. Apropos the kind of negative ads against you, your campaign announced that it's going to honor the company's request to return donations that indicted FTX crypto executive Sam Bankman-Fried made to you. Mayor Lightfoot is still referring to that. Do you believe this issue will or should it fade away now?
I don't think there's much of an issue there, Craig. The ads that the mayor is running are false. If you look at my campaign records, I didn't receive any $200,000 from that company, FTX, ever. So the assertion is totally false, but she pays for them, and she's paid almost $700,000 and run those ads seeking to cast me in a negative light. The $2,900 contribution that was made, I was the first Democrat in Congress to return that money. The Congressional Campaign Committee, like others, has been contacted to return the donation to the representations of FTX debtors and the committee, and we'll comply with that.
Okay. Before we move on to some specific issues, one other overall campaign thing, that same poll out this week showed 18% of the electorate undecided. This close to election day, that number seems large to me. What do you think is making this such a tough decision for voters?
I think people are dealing with, the life pressures of inflation, the high cost of everything from milk to eggs to meat, paying bills, property tax bills. People got their tax bills recently. I think they're focused on that. I think people are focused on just making ends meet, paying their bills. But now they're paying attention. And I think the series of candidate forums and the campaigning that will transpire over the next 2 weeks will be critical in that decision. And of course, I submit my record as an elected official, as a community leader, as someone who's produced for the people that have entrusted me over 40 years. And I think that that will bode well for me.
Now, you more than perhaps anyone else knows how difficult it is to unseat an incumbent, but that poll shows great dissatisfaction with Mayor Lightfoot and her administration. The city has gotten through COVID and it's developing underserved areas. So what do you think is the problem with Mayor Lightfoot that even with those things that she points to, people still, and in that poll, it's a majority, are dissatisfied?
Well, I think Chicagoans are feeling unsafe, and they're feeling unsafe like they've not felt in many, many, many years. The spread of crime, especially things like carjackings and armed robberies, are really shaking people up and making them feel insecure. The mayor's record on this is one of failure. Her bringing in a superintendent who wasn't familiar with Chicago, who doesn't have the support of rank and file officers, community residents don't have a whole lot of confidence in his leadership as well, I think has been a major factor in why people don't feel safer. I also think that her combative style displayed time and time again in how she's engaged the city council, how she's engaged other leaders, how she's failed to engage other sectors of leaders in Chicago are also a part of that. Unnecessarily combative, it's my way or the highway attitude on issues, and of course, not seeking people out for good counsel, for good advice on how to deal with some of the challenges that she's faced. Look, I had a lot of empathy for the mayor, especially during the pandemic months and the difficulty of being at the helm during that period of time. And then from that, we saw the civil unrest that unfolded across Chicago, a lot of the property damage that ensued as well. And I think all of those things and how they were handled has not boded well for the mayor, but I think it's her combative style, her uncollaborative approach to dealing with issues that is being reflected in those public opinion polls.
Now, every candidate except for Lori Lightfoot has vowed to fire Superintendent David Brown, so that's a given. But tell me about some of the other cornerstones of your plans to reduce crime.
Absolutely. So my plan takes us toward building a modern, fully staffed, fully funded, data-informed police department that engages in real community policing and constitutional policing, protecting, respecting people's civil rights, and of course, a comprehensive violence interruption initiative. I have that background in work that I did for 10 years as the leader of a nonprofit organization that excelled in reducing violence, especially gang-related violence in my community. I opened up schools after school hours for students, for parents, and for other youth in the community. That's the concrete and perspective that I bring to the job of the mayor's office. I also think that the mayor's office has to play a very important role providing leadership and guidance, and why I feel that it's imperative at this time in Chicago's history to have a superintendent who knows Chicago, who understands Chicago, and who truly understands how important it will be to restore trust among community residents and the police. Because if you don't have that trust, citizens are not going to participate in solving crimes. They're not going to bring forth information that is essential in finding people who have committed violent acts, who have hurt other people, who have maimed other people, who may be involved in either drug dealing or in carjacking rings or other conduct that's become too common in Chicago.
How much do you think the new community oversight structure that is going to be, in fact, also put into effect in this coming election, how do you expect that to play into these kinds of ideas and plans you have?
I want to see the community council representatives elected from the 22 police districts as one more asset, people power, citizens who can be a connection between public safety and Chicago neighborhoods and communities. I think they can play an instrumental role in bridging the gap, in facilitating conversations, and in facilitating tough conversations, hard conversations about how we reestablish trust and respect in Chicago neighborhoods, especially among officers and residents. I want to see more police officers get out of their cars, knock on doors, be at community gatherings, given the time to establish those relationships and not simply responding to calls that come in on 911 calls. That's very important. One of the elements of my plan is to do away with most of the citywide units, these special task forces, and to deploy them in the neighborhoods. Again, to reestablish that contact, to have conversations, and to let residents know that they're good listeners, that they care about the community, and so that we can stop seeing each other as adversaries. You know, there used to be days and times when people didn't see the police as adversaries and saw them as public servants, that needs to be restored. And I think officers also want to be seen in a different light, ready to engage, willing to engage. And I think that a lot of officers in the police department embrace the need for modern 21st century policing. That means freeing them up from not having to respond to all sorts of calls that can be responded to by other people who are trained in de-escalation, in providing mental health services and counseling, in settling domestic violence disputes, disputes among neighbors that may not require the use of an armed police officer. That's what I'm talking about when I refer to modern 21st century policing, because that is what that's what weaves the type of trust and respect, mutual respect, both ways that we need in Chicago.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore. My guest is Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia, candidate for mayor of Chicago. I want to continue a little bit more on the crime issue, because if we are to listen to the patrolmen or the police union, they suggest that police reform is being done to the officers and not with them. How do you keep police from feeling like they're the targets of reform versus the participants?
Right now, most police officers don't get the opportunity to sit down, have coffee, have a soda, sit on a park bench, stand on a corner and talk with residents. They're always responding to calls on the radio. We've got to provide the opportunity for them to have those normal conversations. They need to be given that time and that flexibility. We need to get to know each other. You know, we've been through a lot of trauma. The lockdown during the pandemic was unprecedented. It did something to all of us. I see people who became more aggressive, less respectful, less empathetic. There's something about it that, you know, a pent up sort of energy in a lot of folks. Officers were exposed, have been exposed to a lot of trauma given all the violence that we've seen on the streets. There haven't been very many opportunities to just sit down and talk and to ask, how are you feeling? What are you seeing out there? You know, how's the job? How's the neighborhood? How tough is it? How different is it from the way it used to be many years ago? How can we make it different? What kind of relationships can we form, you know, with your other neighbors, with the local school, with parents there? How do we relate with young people? Let's have some tough conversations between youth and police officers as well, and just set some ground rules. But to be honest, those are the tough conversations that I think need to happen, that can happen, and that the sooner that they happen, the better off we'll be. We cannot continue to see each other as opponents, as adversaries. And I think that begins with a conversation that you get at the truth, the reality, the perceptions that we have, and why we have those perceptions of each other. And I think that's what 21st century policing can be about. And I think residents would welcome it. And I think police officers will welcome it. And I think all of us will learn more about each other and our humanity.
But you also need to get more people to want to be police officers and to go through the process. And I think it's fair to say that that the city has been trying to get more people to become police officers. What can be done, or what more can be done, to attract and keep more patrol officers so that you have those people to be on the streets and talking to the citizens?
I think that once we get the ball rolling on the modernization of the department, once a new superintendent is in place, makes announcements about new initiatives that will be undertaken, responds by announcing that we want to provide better care for officers, whether it's more predictable work schedules so that they can have more quality time with their families, know when they're working, not receive canceled days off whenever their time off is, greater access to mental health issues, have conversations about the unprecedented number of police suicides and what leads to those conditions where officers are taking their lives. I think that's how we get to the humanity of things. I think it's also how you make an appeal to young people who are out there who are hesitant to pursue a career in law enforcement because they know that it can be a pretty thankless job, that police officers may be perceived as occupiers, as people from outside the community that don't care about the community. And I know for a fact that there are many, many great officers, and especially young officers, who feel differently, old officers as well. But it's, I think, the answer for a change in how things work in Chicago Police Department lies in recruiting new people and in also lifting up the leadership of younger officers who have been in the department and who want to get the department to a better place, especially as it relates to police community relationships. But young officers, I think, can be the best ambassadors for why this is an opportunity to be a part of a changing department that is charged with, you know, serving and protecting people across Chicago, and how you do it effectively in the 21st century by having a more diverse department that reflects the people of Chicago, with officers being given the opportunity to shine by showing that they care, by showing their humanity, and by showing that they too are part of an effort to improve Chicago.
I want to shift gears with the time we have left. Let's talk about business. What's going to keep people and businesses from moving out of downtown Chicago? And yes, crime that we've been talking about for the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes is one of the answers, but it's not the only reason why there are so many stores and office buildings that are having vacancy problems.
The pandemic impacted the rhythm, the rhythm of life in downtown. There haven't been as many people coming into work. Changed work patterns. Remote work has impacted the life of Michigan Avenue, LaSalle Street, other corridor, downtown corridors as well, and it's impacting downtown negatively. We have to reimagine what returning to normalcy is going to look like. I would call for business leaders to come together and talk about it, how we get people downtown. It could include an appeal or mandating that certain workers have to come back on more days, or if they don't, then we may have to talk about readaptation of office space usage and other usages downtown. It's not only a challenge that we're having. New York is experiencing it as well. LA, but to a lesser degree. But in Chicago, it's very important. Revitalizing downtown is critical because downtown can generate many resources, income, revenue, other assets that are critical to starting up new business opportunities, new development in communities across Chicago, so that downtown Chicago and the neighborhoods are intertwined, interlinked. They depend on each other. And everyone agrees that we need to grow Chicago's population. In order to do that, we've got to both revitalize downtown and invest in neighborhoods, especially those that have suffered the most neglect and disinvestment over many decades. There's an opportunity to do that here and now. I've heard that from many business leaders in the downtown sector in particular. There is a takeaway from the civil unrest that we experienced and a lot of the property damage that experienced in Chicago that we cannot continue to develop the city the way we have, because it sows the seeds of discontent, which can lead to the type of violence and property destruction and the loss of lives that we saw before. So I want to marshal that goodwill. I want to implement the takeaways and the lessons that we learned from this really tough experience and get Chicago's economic engines firing again, and also ensuring that investments are made in the neighborhoods to build more affordable housing, to ensure that there's access to clinics, to ensure that public transit is clean and safe and reliable for everyone in Chicago. You need it in order to be able to build more housing, to bring retail development, whether it's grocery stores or other shopping amenities, to neighborhoods that don't have them today. But this is an opportunity and a clarion call to rebuild Chicago and to do it equitably and inclusively. There's a lot of opportunity to grow our green manufacturing sector in Chicago, with the ability to create pipelines for young people graduating from high school and junior college who don't want to become indebted, don't want a four-year education, but can connect to good-paying jobs in manufacturing, in the growing tech sector of Chicago. And Chicago has a lot of potential for continuing to do that as well. And that's why I remain very optimistic that with the historic legislation passed by Congress, and very happy to have had a hand in producing things like the Infrastructure and Jobs Act, which will create many jobs, help us rebuild our infrastructure, replace leaded pipes, broadband installation across the city to everyone so they can be connected. And finally, the opportunities that will come to install solar panels on people's houses, heat pumps in their basements for antiquated, old, inefficient heating systems in their homes. All of these things will create new job and economic development opportunities. And that's why I remain very optimistic about the future, Craig. But key to it is just beginning to make Chicago safer and people becoming more optimistic and being more hopeful and respectful of each other.
We've only got about a minute left. Would the kinds of projects that we are seeing as part of what Mayor Lightfoot is calling her Invest Southwest initiative, would those kinds of things, those efforts continue in a Garcia administration?
I think Invest Southwest gets it right in terms of where the historic disinvestment has been. It needs to be made more intense. It needs to be more coordinated. Housing development needs to be connected with healthcare clinics. It needs to be connected with retail development as well. It needs to involve stakeholders in those communities. There are many neighborhoods in Chicago that have developed their own neighborhood development plans. I know this. I'm an urban planner trained at the University of Illinois at Chicago, passionate about this. That is the type of development that will help Chicago grow, become healthier, safer, and more thriving. And that's how we can transform our city and create a better Chicago in the 21st century and be able to proudly call it a new world-class city.
And that is an excellent final word in this interview. The time has flown by. Thank you very much. That is Congressman Jesus Garcia, a candidate for mayor of Chicago. Thanks for spending the time with us. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcast on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, 105.9 WBBM.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.